Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
All the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison. Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. We are here, baby. It's game week, and Miami is still not back. Spoiler alert to the Canes losing 24-20 over the weekend. Florida and Miami kicking off things with week zero. And what a bizarre game that was. We'll get into that here in just a second. But thank you guys so much for listening and downloading and subscribing. Make sure you guys are telling your friends about the podcast. College Football Country going to be here every single week, hopefully here on Mondays and Fridays. That's the plan right now, that I'll be in your ears talking college football to recap every week and to look forward to the week ahead. And make sure when you leave a rating and review, drop your favorite college football player of all time. Make it the most random player you can think of. If you're new to the podcast, we've been doing this for a year. It's hilarious. Make sure you keep dropping those in. Really enjoy those ratings. It helps me out as well. So without further ado, we're going to get to the podcast. Coming up in just a few minutes, we will hear from Alyssa Lang of SEC Network. She formerly from Florida, now back up here in Charlotte, talking college football with her in a few minutes. Five dumb questions in the SEC with Alyssa Lang. A little bit of donut talk as well with her. So we'll get into that in just a few minutes. Just a quick note, in that interview, we taped it on Friday before the Florida-Miami game. So if you hear her talking about that game, she didn't spend much time on it. But if you do hear that, obviously the game has happened. So final score was 24-20 on Saturday night in Orlando, Florida and Miami. Like I said, a bizarre game, wild ending. You had fumbles left and right. You had interceptions. Felipe Franks throwing a couple picks. The quarterback play, funny enough, it was dynamite in the first half. But in the second half, the defenses kind of took hold. I thought that Miami had every chance to win that game. And Florida made mental mistake after mental mistake. I mean, how many dumb, idiotic, just unexplainable, inexplicable mistakes can one team make and still win? And Florida made just about all of them. I mean, between a pass interference on 4th and 34, a late hit on a fake field goal that would have come back because of a holding penalty. Instead, it gave Miami new life. Miami ended up missing the field goal a few plays later. So no harm, no foul. But still, Florida, so many mistakes. For some reason, passing the ball, because, you know, when you're up protecting a lead with 5 minutes to go, you got to try to move the chains, right? You got to pick up first down. So, of course, why not throw the ball with Felipe Franks, who's erratic at times? So that was shocking to me to see Florida. It's one thing in a first game scenario, opening weekend, to miss a couple tackles here and there, you know, false starts, maybe a holding penalty, whatever. That's fine. But when you are passing, protecting a lead on 1st and 10 with less than 5 minutes to go, when you're taking a sack, which Felipe Franks took, when your third-year starting quarterback is taking a sack at the end of the first half, if you remember that, he got sacked and basically let time expire before halftime as Florida was trying to bang on a late field goal before halftime. Those are the kind of things that those are avoidable with experience. Late hits, that's discipline. That's not early season working out the kinks. That is something that should be coached and instilled from day one. And I was a little disappointed and a little, I guess, caught off guard by a Dan Mullen team making so many mistakes. And we know that Florida this offseason has had its fair share of trouble between dismissals, some suspensions. They had three guys suspended for this game. And they also had, you know, a little bit more offseason turmoil to deal with. Discipline is clearly a problem at Florida right now, and discipline nearly cost them that opening game on Saturday. For Miami, couldn't move the football very well much of the game. They broke a couple plays. DJ Dallas had a great run for a touchdown that put Miami in front. I think DJ Dallas is in for a special season at Miami. I think if the Canes end up winning the ACC Coastal, I think it's because DJ Dallas has a huge year. But for Miami, again, Florida left the door open, and Miami just couldn't step through. I think Miami is going to be just fine in the Coastal. I don't know, you know, with all the criticisms I might have of Miami, I don't know if there's another team, maybe Virginia Tech in the ACC Coastal, who I would have trusted in a game like that to be competitive. It's just the Coastal is that watered down this year. So for Miami, you saw enough. Jaren Williams, God bless the kid. He gets sacked 10 times, hurried another five times, 15 total pressures from Florida. The Gators were in his grill all night long, and especially late in the second half, they pinned their ears back. Todd Grantham knew, you know, game's on the line. He's a blitz-happy defensive coordinator already. He's got a freshman quarterback in his first start on the other side. He brought the heat, and Miami's offensive line couldn't keep Florida out of the backfield long enough for Williams to make plays. Early in the game, he was doing okay. You know, you remember that first drive, Miami chunked the chunk plays down the field pretty quickly, and then they kind of hit the brakes for the next quarter and a half. I thought Miami looked like they scripted out a nice first drive. Everything went according to plan, and then when they had to go off script, all of a sudden they weren't able to make plays. Florida forced Miami into a lot of second and longs, some third and longs, and right now Miami just doesn't have the arm talent at quarterback to be able to, I think, pick up big yards in obvious passing situations. That's going to be something to keep an eye on for Miami moving forward. Florida's got an athletic-as-hell defense. Running game wasn't great the other night, only about, I think it was 54 yards rushing. And Felipe Franks needs to grow up a little bit. Felipe Franks made some mental mistakes that you don't expect to see from a quarterback who started for 2.5 years and is in his second year with Dan Mullen. So that needs to be cleaned up. It is the first game. You would think that they'll improve from here. Miami has to go, of course, play North Carolina in 2 weeks. I like the Canes in that game. We'll learn a lot more about North Carolina this weekend. But for now, Miami showed me enough to say, all right, they can hang in a game with a Florida team that's far more athletic, far more physically superior. I mean, I thought Florida controlled the game from a physicality standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, from a mental standpoint. I was impressed with Manny Diaz. I was impressed with Miami. I thought they, you know, fought, scratched and clawed their way into a chance to win the game in the last couple minutes and just couldn't make it happen. One other note before we get to Alyssa, the ratings came out on Sunday, and ESPN pulls a 4.2 in this game. It's the highest rated ESPN game in 2 years, and of course ESPN's going to make a big deal out of that, as they should. One thing to keep in mind, just before we start talking about college football being saved, it was up against no competition. It was the first game of the year. It was basically the first game of its kind in college football. I mean, if you think about in the past, the opening weekend of college football starts on Saturday, and there's 100 games on the slate. And the primetime games on Saturday night are typically, you know, on ESPN, are going up against a game on Fox, going up against a game on CBS, and actually going up against a game on ABC, which is owned by ESPN. So for this game to be on ESPN, first game of the season, you're going to get a little bit of a bump. Two huge name brand teams, of course, but putting it up against no competition, that it is sort of misleading to say that this was like the biggest game in several years in college football. It wasn't, but it was also a great, I think, test run for ESPN in these week zero games. They moved this game up a week because it's the 150th anniversary of college football, and they wanted to have a game to celebrate this. And they picked Miami, Florida, two great teams, a lot of tradition, a lot of history, national championships. It was a great scene on Saturday. You had Michael Irvin getting lit on Friday night, trying to fire up the Canes fan base. He was on game day the next day. You also had Tim Tebow and Steve Spurrier in the house, a lot of other former Gators, former Canes around. So it was great. It's a rivalry that needs to continue. And I think that what we learned above all else this weekend is these week zero games need to continue. I think we're at a point now in college football where we can put a made-for-TV game on that next-to-last weekend of August before the full slate of games kicks off, pick two big-time teams, put a name-brand matchup in primetime, and let's get people fired up. I don't know that I would do it in Disney World every year. I get why ESPN did that, a little bit of brand synergy there, but I think the overall lesson here is let's put a game like this up next year. Let's get an Oklahoma versus a USC or something like that. Give me two big-time teams in prime time in week zero, and you're going to draw a lot of fans in. Great way to get the season started, get the juices flowing, and now, you know, we've wet the beak a little bit for week one, and I cannot wait to get started. And to talk a little bit more about the first weekend in college football, I'm going to welcome on Alyssa Lang, SEC Network sideline reporter, SEC Network anchor as well. She also is a part of Thinking Out Loud with Greg McElroy and Marcus Spears on the SEC Network. She's awesome. She's the best. You guys are going to love her if you haven't followed her before, heard from her before. She's great. And we're going to do five dumb questions in the SEC. So the most basic questions you can think of. A lot of you guys gave me some really positive feedback. You loved the interview with Mark Ennis. We did 10 dumb questions for college football. We'll give you five dumb questions, five smart answers on SEC football to get you ready for 2019. Here's Alyssa Lang.
I'm the king of counting down like four separate times before I start. Like three, two, wait. Three, two, wait.
I'm the queen of notes, so the fact that I don't have any is making me a little nervous.
Oh, we're
going to
nail it. We're going to nail it. All right. Check one, two. Perfect. Three, two. And now I welcome on. I almost said to the Technicom guest line. I'm in radio mode. Three, two. And now welcome on to the College Football Country Podcast. SEC Network reporter, host, extraordinaire, whatever else. She basically runs the place by now. Alyssa Lang. To a first ever time on the College Football Country Podcast. It's about time. What have you been waiting on?
It's an honor. I've been waiting on this invitation for my entire life, and I am
okay,
so,
now you're just lying.
So blessed to be here today.
Now you're just pandering. I don't appreciate
no
that.
No way. No way.
No, this is going to be fun. You have, you're now going into year two at the SEC Network, right, if my math is correct. And what did you learn? I got to ask that because we always ask, like, players when we bring them on, what'd you learn in your rookie season, right? Like, that's, like, the stock question for us as we ask players. So I'm going to ask you, what'd you learn in your first year at the SEC Network?
Oh, man, I learned a ton. One, you know, you think you know how passionate SEC fans are until you're really in the thick of it and you're really interacting them on a week-to-week basis. And I thought they were passionate. I was totally wrong. They're more passionate than I could have ever imagined. I got to go to a bunch of campuses that I hadn't got to visit yet last year. So it was really cool just to kind of continue that tour around the Southeast. And then, of course, from a TV perspective, you learn something new every day. I learned where I'm supposed to stand, and I blew an interview once or twice, I think, because I was standing in the wrong place at the wrong time. But going into year two, we're better, so we're good.
What's like the biggest mistake? We're in the circle of trust now, all right? I don't
circle
think your bosses
trust
are listening. Stephanie Drulia, if you're out there, just fast forward about 2 minutes. What is the biggest mistake you've ever made on the air?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, last season, it was my first basketball game with the SEC Network. And, I mean, I was such an idiot for doing this, honestly. And we've talked about it ever since with my producer and my crew. But I was sort of in football mode. I mean, I had never sidelined a game before. I came from local news. So, you know, you're sort of doing your 6 o'clock news, your 11. You're not doing anything in game. So when I'm doing my first basketball game, for some reason I had it in my head, sort of like football. You get the coach right outside the tunnel, you know, right in the end zone. So I walk off the court and I'm waiting for coach to come into the tunnel. And they're like, Lang, where are you? Where are you? I think it was Rick Barnes. I'm like, I'm waiting for him to come by. I'm waiting for him to walk into the locker room because I'm thinking I grab him, you know, on the way into the locker room. They're like, no, you're supposed to be on the court. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I have watched 1,000 basketball
right
games, and I have watched the reporter do the interview on the court, but in my head, for some reason that day, I was just like, oh, the football, got to go by the tunnel, and totally missed the interview. Thankfully, Coach Barnes is awesome. He let us, I think, get him coming out of halftime, you know, on the other side of that, break. So that was a learning experience. But thankfully, my crew in the booth, they were great. They glazed right over it. You would have had no idea that I totally blew that.
You know, everybody, we all have our learning moments. And I guess that was the one for you. You know, losing Rick Barnes. You know, we've all lost Rick Barnes at some point in our life, have we not?
True.
So we're going to talk football. Enough basketball for today. This is College Football Country Podcast. First of all, what are you most excited about? We're going to get into the five dumb questions and all that stuff in a minute because I like asking dumb questions. I think I'm pretty good at it. What are you most excited about with this football season? What's like your number one thing you're looking forward to?
Well, the one thing I look forward to week is something I started last year, which I call my college football donut tour. If you know me, you know me on social media, I'm always trying new donut shops. And last year I started this thing where every town I would go into, I would try to find the best mom and pop donut shop and post about that. That, on top of just the food across the SEC, is always fun. Oh, yeah. Okay, we got to talk football, too, on Saturdays, which is exciting in and of itself. But I guess football-wise, there are a couple teams that I'm really excited to see play this year, one being Missouri. I think Missouri's a team that not a lot of people are talking about coming into this year, especially with Kelly Bryant being there. I got to do Missouri's spring game, got to talk with Kelly, got to talk with some of the coaching staff. And I think it's pretty amazing that with all the postseason sanctions that Mizzou is looking at right now, not one player requested to transfer coming into this year. So if what the NCAA has over Mizzou right now stands, which is a whole other conversation, there were no players looking to leave. They're still looking to ride out their time with Missouri. I think that says a lot about the program. And I'm excited to see what Kelly Bryant does. I mean, you go from Drew Locke to Kelly Bryant coming in and running your offense. You've got this tight end named Albert Okwuegbunam, who's a beast. So I'm excited to see what that offense can do. I think they have the chance to really maybe shake things up in the SEC. And, of course, you have to give credit where it's due. Alabama and Georgia are the powerhouses right now. It will probably be Alabama and Georgia at the end of the year, but what excites me are the LSUs, the Texas A&Ms, maybe the Kentuckys and the South Carolinas in the East, the Floridas that can maybe get in and shake that up a little bit, because, you know, you love seeing these dynasties and these great teams, but it's also like, all right, who's going to step up to the plate and shake it up in the SEC? So that's really exciting, knowing that week in and week out, you never know what could happen.
Well, and, you know, as far as the dynasty thing goes, I mean, who's to say when Alabama's reign is truly going to end? But these dynasties can end a lot quicker than you think, and you really don't usually see it coming. I mean, USC, they had a run of about 4 years where they were dominant, and then all of a sudden, they were good, but they certainly weren't the same program. Miami's run ended abruptly back in the early 2000s. I mean, this does happen. Like, all of a sudden, dynasties can end. Now, sometimes it's a coaching change, sometimes it's not. But for Alabama, you never know. Georgia is certainly closing the gap. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Really quickly with Kelly Bryant, before I get into the five dumb questions. This might have been the dumbest question of the entire offseason, so
oh boy.
I have to get your thought on it. The championship ring thing. What was your stance? Everybody had to pick a side on whether or not Kelly Bryant deserved that championship ring at Clemson.
So I can understand both sides. I certainly get, you know, he should get one. He was part of the resume. He was part of what got them there. I get the fact that he wasn't in that championship game. He doesn't get a ring. At the end of the day, if I'm Kelly Bryant, I don't want a ring. I mean, I wasn't on that team. I wasn't there for that game. You know, I've moved on. I'm with Missouri now. Clemson is part of my past. I don't want a ring. I can't speak for Kelly, but I have to imagine that's how he feels. Dabo can do what Dabo can do, but I also read somewhere that there's some rule that he couldn't have even gotten a ring
right. Anyway
because he didn't even suit up for the game. He wasn't on the roster. So, you know, take that out of consideration because no one wants to pay attention to the fine print. We just want to argue. But like I said, I get both sides. If I'm Kelly, I'm like, let's move on. I don't even want it.
Yeah, I think the important caveat when I was debating this, honestly, it was like 4 days worth of topic on sports radio because it was the early part of August. But my takeaway was this: Kelly Bryant deserved a ring if Kelly Bryant wanted one. Like, nobody asked for his opinion until after we had litigated this for days on end. And then Kelly came out and kind of refuted it and said he's moving on. And to your point, that's kind of his right to say so. I would say this if we're just backing out, forgetting about NCAA rules and all that stuff. I do think the principle of the fact that Kelly Bryant had his concrete impact on that team and won that game for them against Texas A&M and started 4 games for them. Yeah, they probably would have won at least the other three with Trevor Lawrence. Maybe they win with A&M against A&M, but Trevor Lawrence struggled in that game. I do think there's value in that. And then my soapbox of the day, and then we'll get onto the SEC football stuff, with this new rule, the new transfer rule that allows you to play 4 games and still be able to redshirt. That's brand new to college football. Last year was the first time it happened. Kelly Bryant, and I give him all the credit for it. I don't begrudge him for doing it. He exploited the rule. The rule was created for young guys. It was created for freshmen. It was created for guys who are trying to transition to college and might need, you know, 2, 3, 4 games. You know, get a little taste of football, play a little special teams, whatever it might be, and still be able to preserve that year of eligibility. That's what the rule was intended for, and that is a noble intent. But when you have guys like Kelly Bryant, who started in the college football playoff the year before and has started, you know, 16, 17 games at Clemson, then basically just saying, you know what, I'm unhappy because I'm not starting anymore, I'm not getting my playing time, I'm out. I don't begrudge him for taking advantage of the rule, but if you're going to transfer because you don't think that you're going to get the opportunity at your current school to put tape, you know, for NFL scouts or whatever it might be, transfer before the season. Don't allow upperclassmen those 4 games. I would just keep that to, if we don't want to say only freshmen, first 2 years on campus. Your first 2 years, you get 4 games in one of those 2 seasons and you can still redshirt. But if it's your 3rd year on campus, you're used to college. You're used to where your 8 a.m. is. You know where the dining hall is. You don't need four games or an extra year to get used to the college football, the student athlete experience. I do think Kelly Bryant exploited that, but it was his right to do so because that was the rule.
Right. And I mean, like you said, Kelly Bryant certainly made the best of that situation for him. And I get this question a lot, just what do you think of the transfer situation? And, you know, I just try to put myself in the mindset of the players. And like you said, you know, on one hand, I grew up playing sports. You know, this business is a pretty competitive business. I like to think that, you know, okay, if there's someone better than me, I just want to work harder and eventually sit at the table with them, or eventually maybe be able to take reps where I want to go. But at the same time, looking at Kelly Bryant's situation, Trevor Lawrence is a once-in-a-lifetime player. No one else in the country besides maybe Tua was going to beat out Trevor Lawrence for a starting job. So if I'm Kelly, I'm like, yeah, let me get the heck out of here and go somewhere else, because I want to be able to take care of my family in a year and get an NFL check. So I understand both sides of it, because, you know, you got these coaches who obviously want deep quarterback rooms. And look at what happened with Alabama last year with Tua and Jalen. That worked out swimmingly for Alabama all through, you know, the last game of the season.
Yeah.
But It's such an interesting debate, and I think it's one of those debates that we're going to continue to have for years to come, unless they, you know, keep trying to fine-tune those rules. But I like the fact that players, I guess, feel like they have options, because whether you're in a situation, if it's a work or a relationship or whatever it is, no one wants to feel stuck, and no one wants to feel like they're stuck in a situation that they can't get out of if they don't want to be there. And if I'm a coach, I don't want you there if you don't want to be there. So I think that goes a long way, too.
Yeah, it does, and I'm all for the players having options and freedom. They should. They absolutely should. I believe, and I'll never know for sure, but I'd be willing to bet Dabo knew what he had in Trevor Lawrence, and Dabo also knew I can bring him along slowly. I've got a pretty manageable schedule. The A&M game last year was obviously a bit of a, you know, a hurdle, but
and Syracuse, too.
It was, but that was the fifth game. The point being, he knew early on, I can play Kelly.
Right.
I can give Trevor, you know, bits and pieces here. I can give him a little taste, but I can also just make sure that Kelly's still here. And then, you know, we'll see. Maybe I keep Kelly the rest of the season, whatever. Right. If the rule was, what I'm suggesting, that younger guys can play the four games, but a guy like Kelly, if you play, that it's just like the old rule. You've lost your eligibility or whatever. Then I bet Dabo would have named Trevor the starter from day one and given Kelly the option, because Dabo was doing the right thing when he gave Kelly the choice after four games, said, hey, I'll pull you. I won't play you unless I have to. I think he would have had that same conversation 4 weeks earlier if Kelly wasn't able to play those four games. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
I think that would have happened.
You would want to know that too, obviously, going into the season.
It helps the
not
team.
4 weeks in, but at the same time, you know, Dabo's making the decision best for his roster, which is exactly what he did, like you said.
All right. Well, enough about what happened in September of last year. Why don't we talk about 2019? So I played 10 dumb questions with Mark Ennis the other day from Louisville. We talked really national stuff, big picture, little ACC, but you're an SEC network girl, so we'll talk five dumb questions in the SEC.
All right.
Now, I have not prepped you on any of
these.
No,
I'm a little nervous.
Trust me, the questions could not be any dumber.
Okay.
Like, nothing you haven't heard before.
Okay.
I promised you no curveballs. If I throw a curveball at you, you can reach across the table and cut my
right
mic
back
away. All right, number one, is Alabama still the king of college football?
Yes. I think it is silly to
Homer.
Say that Bama had – no, not a homer at all. I grew up an ACC fan, which I always tell people when they say, you know, oh, you're an SEC homer. I'm like, no, I grew up in the ACC, and you and I are very similar. I grew up in Blacksburg, Virginia, and it was some of the best football I've ever seen in my life. Grew up a Mike Vick fan, Tyrod Taylor all the way.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of know the ACC pulse a little bit, but it grinds my gears to hear people say the Bama dynasty is over. Just because Clemson is also good and also winning national championships doesn't mean that Bama's fallen off. Both of these things can be true. Bama and Clemson can both be dynasties. Clemson more so on the way to becoming a dynasty. Both of these things can exist without one having fallen off. So that drives me crazy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Clemson, they're puffing their chest out right now, as they should. 44-16, you can't help but walk around with a little bit more confidence. And Clemson, I think, for the moment, I look at this as like a horse race. And Clemson's a nose ahead right now. But they're also 5, 6, 7 lengths ahead of everybody else. And they're battling for supremacy, and they're going to continue to battle for supremacy. I think that Wes Durham on the ACC Network made a really good point on his radio show this morning. We're recording this on Friday, the day the ACC Network debuted. And he said, you know, Clemson seems to be looking ahead, and Alabama seems to spend a little bit too much time looking back. You know, Dylan Moses making the comments at SEC Media Day about what did Moses say exactly now? Because I know Saban was blaming the coaching staff. Moses said they weren't focused.
I can't even remember. I know that they say, you know, well, if we had him again or if we had him at the
beginning of the year, something along those lines. Making excuses for the loss and everything. And I do think that Alabama just needs to say, hey, you know what? We got beat. We got beat good. And it's time for us to turn the page and move forward. Alabama, I use this analogy a lot with these two programs, Alabama and Clemson. Clemson has proven over the last 4 years their ceiling is every bit as high as Alabama. Clemson's floor, though, is a lot lower than Alabama's because Clemson has lost twice in the last few years as a three-touchdown favorite. They lost to Pitt. Now, it didn't end up hurting them. They still made it and won the national title in 2016. But they lost to Syracuse on the road up in the Dome 2 years ago when Kelly Bryant got hurt. They've also had close calls against NC State a couple times. They have barely escaped in a few tough games, Syracuse a year ago. So Clemson has a habit of playing down to its competition. Alabama has not lost to an unranked team since Louisiana Monroe back in 07, since Saban's first year.
Right, and that's the thing, too. And, you know, a lot of people want to look at Bama's schedule and say it's easy, but Clemson
isn't. I don't think it is.
It's not. Clemson's not facing LSU, Texas A&M, Georgia week in and week out. There's no one, at least right now, from what I can see, maybe Miami this year in the ACC that holds a candle to the second, third best teams in the SEC West. There's just not. Virginia Tech used to be there. Florida State used to be there. These big powerhouse, Boston College even used to be able to give you heck.
Yeah.
There's just nobody in the ACC right now that really holds a candle to Clemson. And I think until it improves, Clemson is always going to be fighting that narrative. And that's why, I mean, I wish so badly we could see an Alabama-Clemson matchup like week two before these two teams are beat to crap and, you know, they've been playing for so many weeks. I would love to see what these two teams look like fresh. But, I mean, like you said, Bama's a dynasty. Bama's been here for a while. And I think what's interesting about Clemson is you mentioned how quickly these dynasties can fall off and maybe how quickly these teams could go from on top of the world to, you know, not winning for the next several seasons. Clemson sort of came out of nowhere. I mean, I was at South Carolina for 4 years and we never lost to Clemson when I was there. Taj Boyd never beat South Carolina while he was at Clemson. So the fact that sort of in the last several years, what Dabo's been able to do again, seemingly out of nowhere, has been really incredible that now they're competing. Not just competing, they beat the brakes off of Bama last year. So I think it's such an interesting conversation, but I would love to see Clemson play an SEC schedule and see what the end of their year looks like. Of course, that's impossible. It's obviously never going to happen, but it would be interesting to see them going up again against the LSUs and the A&Ms and the Missouris week in and week out.
Yeah, and you know, for Clemson, this is going to sound like I'm making an excuse for Alabama, and I don't really mean for it to come across that way, but you look at Clemson over the last month of last season, you know, basically the games that led up to the playoff, of course, they had, you know, a few weeks off before they played Notre Dame, but Clemson played against one NFL draft pick in November. One guy who's on an NFL roster right now. And if you include the Notre Dame game in the semifinals, they played against four NFL picks in their last five games before playing Alabama. Meanwhile, Alabama, over the last month of the season, including the SEC championship game, and actually Oklahoma didn't put a single guy in the NFL who they played in the semifinal, but they faced LSU, two NFL guys. Mississippi State, four, including three first-rounders. They also face Auburn, three draft picks. Georgia, two draft picks, including a first-rounder. That is 11 NFL draft picks that they faced in a four-game span, whereas Clemson played one.
Right.
And that matters. Like, the fact that the SEC put out 63 draft picks last year, the ACC 28, that is a massive gap. And Clemson, like I said, ceiling every bit as good as Alabama. But when you're not facing Montez Sweat and Jonathan Abram against, you know, Mississippi State was a middle of the road team in the SEC last year, and they still had three guys on defense that went in the first round. That is tough. And there's a reason why Tua was limping to the finish line.
Right. And I think what's very interesting to look back on, and anyone again who's listening is going to think I'm biased saying this, but watching the South Carolina Clemson game from last year, Jake Bentley put 400 yards up on that Clemson defense.
Yes.
I mean, it was insane watching him pick them apart. Now, South Carolina's defense was just broken and injured and very young, so it didn't matter what Jake Bentley was going to do that night. Clemson was going to win, and they were going to put points up. But the fact that a mediocre SEC East team shredded up the secondary like that, to me, says a lot. And again, I think it just comes down to Clemson not being as battle-tested week in and week out. And like you said, Tua limping to the finish line when it comes to the end of the season, you know, it wasn't like that for Clemson.
And that would be my worry about Alabama. I talked about this a little bit with Mark on the last podcast, is that if Tua is beat up at any point this season, they don't have Jalen Hurts there to bail him out like they did a year ago. I mean, if it weren't for Jalen Hurts, Alabama loses the SEC championship game. I mean, hindsight's 2020, but they may or may not make the playoff had they lost that game. Obviously, Georgia, you know, was left out. So we'll see, you know, how that impacts them this year, not having that, you know, safety net like Jalen Hurts. But number two, kind of right off of that, my number two dumb question, Georgia, do you think they can get over the hump this year?
I don't know. I really don't know. That's a tough question for me, because I go back and forth with our analysts on this all the time, and everyone's on one end of the spectrum or the other. I've talked to a lot of our folks at the SEC Network who think Georgia's defense is going to be better this year. This is the year for Jake Fromm. But what scares me is Fromm's leading returning receiver is a running back. That is terrifying to me, that DeAndre Swift has the most receiving yards coming back. I mean, that wide receiver core obviously is talented. Kirby Smart has been recruiting like crazy the last couple of years. I would trust Kirby if I'm a Georgia fan to think, okay, there's going to be some guy who steps up. There's two, maybe three guys who can step up and help. But I think if Georgia gets it done in the next couple of years, it does have to be this year. I think this is the year for Jake Fromm. If they're finally going to get over the hump, it has to be this season.
I don't know about that. See, listen, I know Fromm is highly regarded by some NFL scouts, and there's a chance that he comes out. He may be a first-round pick. I know that there are also some NFL scouts that aren't sold on the kid. And depending on how this season unfolds, there is a chance that he were to come back. If he does, I mean, Georgia, you talk about loaded.
Right.
They would be loaded next year. And Alabama is going to be replacing Tua next season. So I actually feel like it really does set up.
You don't think Tua's
going to stay? Yeah, I think Tua would be gone right now if he could, speaking of NCAA rules. But I think that Jake, if he were to stick around, and that's a big if, then Georgia would certainly be, I think, the preseason number one. Well, maybe number two next year. Trevor Lawrence is still going to be around. But they have a better outlook in 2020. A lot of Georgia fans don't want to hear that. They're ready to get over that hump now. They've been so close. I get it. You know, it's funny. We're in the middle of NFL preseason, and it basically means nothing. But one thing that I get kind of interested in the NFL preseason as a college football fan is looking at the guys who are playing well and wondering, like for a late-round pick, like Terry Godwin. Terry Godwin's here in Carolina and is playing pretty darn well in the preseason, and it makes you wonder, like, maybe they really are going to miss that guy. Jacoby Myers is tearing it up in New England and at NC State. You know, he was an undrafted kid, and you wonder, like, oh, man, maybe they lost more talent than we realize,
right,
you know, for a guy who's balling out at the next level. So, you know, between Terry Godwin and Mecole Hardman gone, obviously a ton to replace at receiver, but Georgia's got dudes.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got talent.
They're going to have talent for years to come. I mean, you just look at the recruiting rankings every single year, and it's, you know, Texas A&M snuck in there this year, but it's Bama, it's Georgia, it's Clemson. It's these same teams over and over again because, I mean, look at the consistency on these staffs. You know, maybe except for Alabama. Alabama's had quite a bit of turnover on their staff for the last couple of years, but that's what happens when you're a powerhouse. Guys come in and poach your guys. So Georgia is one of those programs that, you know, I guess Clemson sort of emulates, I think, what Georgia was a couple of years ago when we knew, okay, Georgia's getting good. Georgia's going to make some noise. Georgia just has a harder path into the SEC championship, into the college football playoff. Because, I mean, you remember that SEC championship game last year. Georgia was close. And if Georgia had won that game, I have to believe it would have been Georgia and Bama in the playoff, in the top four teams. It would have had to be. I can't imagine any other combination, I guess, but That was a close game, and again, that was that game that Jalen comes in and saves it for Alabama. So it's an interesting up and down if you're a Georgia fan. My heart almost hurts for them sometimes just because it seems like they just get so close, but Bama's always in the way. But it's going to be interesting. I know most of our conversations have just revolved around, all right, who's second in the West and second in the East? Because we're already chalking in Bama and Georgia to be in the SEC championship game in Atlanta. So I think that's how much respect, obviously, the rest of the conference has for those two teams. And we see that they're loaded on the roster. But again, anything can happen because Florida's going to be pretty good this year, too. I would not count on Florida to roll over against Georgia this year.
Well, and they play Florida at around Halloween, November 2nd, as they do every year, which kind of leads into my next point. I think back about Auburn a couple years ago when Auburn made the SEC title game. They played Georgia, and they were – I mean, you want to talk about a team that was limping into that game. They had played Georgia on the road and upset them. They had also played Alabama and won that game, shockingly, in the Iron Bowl. And they get to the SEC championship game, and Auburn's kind of this red-hot team. Could they get in? I think they might have had two losses at the time anyway. But they had beaten those two programs who at the time were, top three in the country in Georgia and Alabama. And they had no gas left in the tank when they got to the SEC title game. Now, I think Georgia now has more talent and is probably a little deeper than that Auburn team was. But look at what Georgia faces in November. Florida, Missouri, who you just mentioned earlier, not a bad team. That's a pretty good football team, Missouri. At Auburn, Texas A&M, who's preseason number 10 in the AP poll, and then Georgia Tech. Now, Georgia Tech's going to be pretty rough, but it's on the road. So you're talking about basically you might be facing four top 25 teams in your last five games, and then, go play Alabama in the SEC title game. I worry about that into the schedule. Now, Alabama doesn't have an easy slate either. They've got to go on the road to Auburn. They've got to play LSU on the road. So both teams have a difficult slate, but I worry about Georgia. How are they going to be physically by the time, that SEC championship game rolls around? Could it be another situation in Auburn a few years ago?
Yeah, and I mean, I think, like we said a couple minutes ago, it's just a different beast when you play in the SEC. And I hate to sound like an SEC homer, but I mean, we watch the games week in and week out. And like I said at the beginning, I grew up an ACC fan, and like I got to see some really great ACC football, but it's just a different feeling in the SEC. It's bigger guys. It's faster. It's, for the most part, stronger. Not to knock any other conferences. They're very talented players, obviously, in all the other conferences, but SEC football across the board, it's just a different animal. And like you said, that November schedule for a team like Georgia, I hadn't even sat down and looked at that, realizing that they would probably then go in and play Alabama after that, and that just sounds terrible.
It adds up. I mean, good luck, Georgia. I mean, have fun with that. Like, this is what you want. You want to be a big dog, no pun intended. I mean, you're going to have to get through a pretty brutal November. Along those lines, I mentioned Auburn, number three dumbest question in the SEC. Gus Malzahn, I know I could probably ask this question 3 days from now and the answer is going to be different, but is he coaching for his job? Like, do you think, I guess I'll frame it this way, do you think that Gus Malzahn will be Auburn's coach a year from now?
I mean, obviously it'll depend on what happens this season. We're going to learn a lot week one when they take on Oregon. I mean, that's going to be such a great opening week game for them. And I think Auburn fans are really going to get a taste, obviously, of what their team looks like, because this has been an Auburn team that just sort of seems to be creeping closer and closer to finally being able to present a challenge in the SEC, but just never really being able to capitalize on that and sort of get over that hump. They just named a starting quarterback in Bo Nix. They've got a couple of really good guys in that quarterback room. I actually got to watch Joey Gatewood play in high school. I was in Jacksonville for a couple years. He played at Bartram Trail. And I remember the first time I walked out onto the field and watched Joey Gatewood, I was like, that's Cam Newton Jr. I mean, he looks like Cam Newton. So honestly, going into it, I thought Joey was going to get the starter job. Bo Nix gets announced to be the starter this past week, and just hearing our analysts and watching tape on him, he seems to be just the ultimate dual threat guy for the pieces that Auburn has on that offense. If Bo Nix can go, Auburn can go, and obviously Gus Malzahn will stay. But if they can get a big win over Oregon week one, I would feel much more positively about Auburn going into the rest of the season. Now, if they go out and struggle in that first game and get embarrassed, I'm nervous. I'm certainly nervous for the rest of the season because, again, the SEC schedule ain't easy, and Auburn's schedule is not easy either.
Yeah, I mean, I'm nervous about a freshman quarterback, as talented as he might be. It just feels like you flip a coin with Auburn. Like, some years, they've got a quarterback. Other years, they don't. Some years, they think they've got one, and it turns out, who was the guy? I'm blanking on the guy a few years ago. Oh, this is going to kill me. Somebody's going to comment on the podcast and tell me I'm a moron. But there was a guy a few years ago that Auburn was super high on. He came out and he was terrible. They ended up subbing him out like three games into the season. I should be better than that. I usually remember that.
I should,
that.
Too, and I'm not giving you any help.
I'll post it on Twitter and apologize. What was the guy's name? That's going to kill me. I'll look it up later. But anyway, Auburn's had this in the past. Where they get excited about a quarterback. He might not necessarily live up to the hype. I'm not saying that's going to happen with Bo Nix, but, man, Oregon week one, great defensive line, way more experienced quarterback. I actually like Oregon in that game. Oregon is creepily becoming my dark horse pick for the playoff. I really like the way their schedule sets up after Auburn. The Pac-12, not very daunting. But in terms of Auburn, they play Florida and Georgia out of the East. It doesn't get any harder than that.
Right.
I mean, you have to play the SEC West gauntlet, and you've got to play the top two teams out of the East. That's going to catch up to Auburn. A&M plays a tough schedule as well. The SEC West is going to eat somebody alive, and it very well may be Auburn with an inexperienced quarterback, with some other questions on offense. I don't think Gus Malzahn will be the Auburn coach a year from now. And the funny question would be, like, who could be that replacement for him?
What makes me question it, too, though, is, you know, you've got – a redshirt freshman or a true freshman, and it's like, can you put that on Gus Malzahn if an 18-year-old kid isn't quite ready to come out and light it up yet? I mean, do you give him two
years? Auburn fans, like, aren't going to give him that kind of patience.
I know Auburn fans want to win, and they want to win now. Of course, anybody in this conference does, but, you know, if Bo Nix comes out and wins six games, is that not enough? I mean, like I said, he's a freshman. I don't know the answer to that question, but
I think they'd have to at least get to eight. I think they have to get to eight wins, which would not sit well in Auburn, but you could probably at least sell. All right, young quarterback,
progress.
We're building, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it also probably matters which of those eight wins are they. Like, do you beat Oregon? Do you beat LSU? Do you beat Florida on the road? I mean, if they beat Alabama, that obviously is a game changer.
Oh, you're done,
but,
yeah.
I mean, you're
season.
Good. Exactly. Beat Alabama doesn't matter. And that's saved Malzahn a couple times. But by the way, Jeremy Johnson, that was the guy. Jeremy Johnson a couple years ago.
Right,
remember,
he was right.
Him and Sean White were battling for the job, and everybody thought Johnson was going to be like player of the year in the SEC, and he was terrible. He was so bad the first few
weeks.
It did not last. So hopefully that doesn't happen with Bo Nix. But yeah, Malzahn, I think eight wins is the minimum for him. And listen, a rational fan base might be able to see young quarterback, fits the system, might take a year or two, but you're building something there. I don't know if that's going to get it done at Auburn. So, number four, dumb question. We're almost there. Which program turns the corner this year? There's a few in the SEC that I feel like are ready to kind of enter themselves back into the conversation as one of the upper echelon teams. You mentioned one in Missouri. I'll tell you who mine is, and I'll see what you think, and then you can tell me yours. I think Tennessee is going to surprise some people this year. I love their wide receivers. You talk about Juwan Johnson, Marquez Callaway. That is a tremendous pair at wide receiver. I was listening to Daniel Jeremiah and Rhett Lewis on their podcast last week. They were talking about some of the quarterbacks they saw at the Manning Passing Academy. And Rhett Lewis said Jarrett Garantano looked like the most improved quarterback from last summer to now. Granted, I don't put a ton of stock in what they look like in shorts in the summer. But Rhett Lewis knows a lot about quarterbacks, and if he thinks that Garantano is taking a step forward, I at least take that as a good sign. With Jeremy Pruitt running the defense and an improved Jarrett Garantano with that kind of receiving core, I'm not saying Tennessee's going to win the SEC East, but I do think this is an 8, maybe even a 9-win team. I think Tennessee could be the surprise team in the conference this year.
Yeah, and I know a lot of Tennessee fans love to hear that because they have had a rough last couple of years. But, I mean, from what I've seen happening up in Knoxville and from Coach Pruitt, just being able to talk to some of the guys up there at SEC Media Days this past summer, I mean, I think everything you're saying is true. I think the culture change is happening up there in Knoxville. They're really turning the page. So I would not be surprised if I saw Tennessee be one of those teams in the SEC that stacks up a bunch of wins. When I think about turning the page, I guess a bunch of SEC East teams do jump out to me. I don't know if it's necessarily turning the page, but this is finally Will Muschamp's team in South Carolina. He's going into his fourth. These are all of his players now.
Right.
He's not dealing with any of the drop-off between the Spurrier Muschamp. They've got new facilities. Jake Bentley's a senior. He's got some good senior and veteran receivers. So this could be a year that South Carolina finally starts to actually make some noise compared to what they did 4 or 5 years ago. Also, Florida. I mean, I don't want to say Florida will turn a corner because obviously last year they had such a great year under Coach Mullen, but I want to see it continue. I want to see it be consistent. I want to see them get back to the Florida football that we've been accustomed to. This year will be interesting. I think when Felipe goes, Florida goes. And I'm very interested to see how Felipe plays against Miami this coming weekend. It'll be interesting. It'll answer a lot of our questions. But Florida has so many talented guys on both sides of the ball. They got a bunch of running backs that are great. They've got a bunch of receivers that are great. Their corners are great. So I think Florida has the chance to really turn the corner as far as getting back to Florida football. And then this is a team that really flies so far under the radar that, you know, and they should. They only had two wins last year. Arkansas. Arkansas is one of those teams that nobody's talking about. Arkansas is not going to win the SEC. They're not going to win the East. They might not win, you know, more than six games this year, but compared to where they were last year, I think we are going to see a very different Arkansas team. I got to spend some time there this spring. If you watch Last Chance U, there's this running back named Rakeem Boyd. He's their starting running back this year. He's a talented guy. He started at A&M.
Yep.
Their quarterback battle, Ben Hicks from SMU and Nick Starkel. I mean, those are two very talented quarterbacks. Right. And I got to watch Ben Hicks as well last year when SMU played Houston. Houston was ranked in the top 25. SMU was not. And Hicks led them to an upset win over Houston. And just watching him on the sideline interact with his guys and really just be that veteran quarterback leader into a big win over an Ed Oliver Houston team was pretty amazing. So, you know, again, last year, Arkansas didn't have a great year. This year might not be amazing, but I think they're certainly on the come up to being competitive on that side of the SEC.
Hey, Chad Morris is a wizard. A big fan of that guy.
Yeah.
You know, as a Virginia Tech fan a few years ago, I wanted them to bring him in, maybe even as the head coach when they hired Fuente. Like, I was a huge fan of Chad Morris. He'd shredded Virginia Tech for years when he was running the offense at Clemson. So it's a very steep uphill battle when you talk about that division in the SEC West. But you're right, the quarterback position, they've got options. I mean, Ben Hicks and Nick Starkel, both talented kids. I saw Starkel up close when he was in high school before he was – I think he was actually once an Oklahoma State commit, then ended up at A&M, and now he's at Arkansas. But they've got guys there who can play the position. Interesting, too, they got the number one tight end recruit in the country, Hudson Henry. And I don't know how much of an impact he's going to make this season, but they've got some talent in the pipeline. Like, Chad Morris is trying to build something.
It's starting.
It's going to take some time. You don't have the same sort of infrastructure that Alabama does. It's going to take you time just to try to become competitive. You mentioned Florida, and Dan Mullen did something in the SEC West at a program with not as many resources at Mississippi State and made them great. He's at Florida with infinitely more talent, infinitely more resources at his disposal. It's kind of funny. There's like this anti-Florida movement right now because they did have some, you know, they had some issues in the offseason, some dismissals, things along those lines off the field. But now that they're strapping it up, they got the guys they got, you know, the guys they got are the guys they got. And I think they're gonna handle Miami on Saturday night. I think this Florida team is going to give Georgia everything it can handle. I mean, we'll see what happens 2 months from now, how these two teams look. But I think Florida's a worthy challenger in the SEC East. And look at Dan Mullen's track record at quarterback. I mean, Felipe Franks took a huge step forward last season. We know what Dan Mullen did with Nick Fitzgerald, who, by the way, took a huge step back last year when Dan Mullen left. And then also, of course, Dak Prescott. So I trust in Mullen at Florida. I think that Florida will be every bit as good as their preseason ranking would say. South Carolina, just to address him real quick, because you talked about him. They badly needed Tavian Feaster, the guy who transferred
badly
from Clemson.
Yes.
They have not ranked, in Will Muschamp's 3 years there, they haven't ranked higher than 12th in the SEC in rushing. That's a huge problem. I mean, they have the way they play defense, the style that they play, they're not wide open. They're not throw it all over the yard. I know Bentley shredded Clemson once, but this is not like a high-octane offense. They have to be able to run the football. Tavian Feaster, he's shown the ability to do that. He was a game breaker at Clemson, even if Travis Etienne overshined him, you know, those few years that he was there. So if Feaster can hit the ground running at South Carolina, I think they could get off to a nice start. North Carolina, Charleston Southern, you got to play Alabama, but Missouri, Kentucky, I mean, this team could be 4-1 going into October, and from there, build a little momentum. You never know.
Yeah, and I mean, Feaster was so important to replace Deebo Samuel as well, because Deebo Samuel was just the heartbeat
yes.
of that offense last year, and replacing Deebo was something that I know a lot of people in Columbia were very nervous about. But, you know, again, you look at that offense, and you've got Jake Bentley, you've got Brian Edwards, you've got Ortre Smith going, you know, with some experience under their belts as well. Jake Bentley is one of those quarterbacks in the SEC that numbers-wise is fairly consistent. He's very accurate with the ball, but he just hasn't had those pieces around him to really be able to shake up their side of the conference or get those big-time wins. I mean, I remember being at the game in 2010 when South Carolina beat Alabama, and I never experienced anything like it. If they can do that in Columbia, forget the rest of the year. That's all Man. I care about.
Well,
and if they could beat Clemson too, obviously.
I was in Columbia. I was at Williams-Brice last year when Georgia came to town.
Ooh, yeah.
And it felt like, you know, the 3 hours before the kickoff.
The first 30 seconds.
It was like, all right, South Carolina, there's an energy here. Like, you never know. Like, they might give Georgia a run. And then it was like 21 to nothing. It was something. I think that South Carolina actually did score early. But it was a blowout pretty quickly
South
there.
Carolina's defense last year was just such bad shape. I mean, yeah. I think at one point, and this is probably wrong, but it's something along these lines, they had to take like a receiver and put him at corner or something halfway through the season. So, I mean, they were so depleted and so young to begin with. But that's one of the things that they're excited about this year, too, and just being able to talk to some of the coaching staff and even some of the guys, you know, they actually feel confident going into this season. They're not banged up. These guys aren't freshmen completely, especially in the secondary. They feel more confident going into this year. And that's 75% of the battle. It's just feeling like you can go out there and play and potentially beat up on some guys.
Well, and Bentley's another guy that you hear everything you always hear in the offseason is positive. Everybody's taking strides, right? Everybody's been in the weight room. Everybody's looking sharp. But I don't know, for whatever it's worth, Jake Bentley does look good, apparently, in spring practice and some of the camps he's been to this summer. And they're optimistic that he could have a breakthrough season as a senior finally. I mean, he's been there for forever. Last question. Dumb question. Best donut in the SEC.
Oh, man. Okay, I haven't been to every SEC school yet for donuts, but, oh, my gosh, let me think. Where did I go last year? There was a donut spot. I guess I went in the spring. There was a donut spot in Missouri. I'm going to remember the name of it. They were some of the best donuts ever. Harold's Donuts in Columbia,
Harold's
Missouri.
Harold's Donuts in Columbia. There
and,
we go.
And if y'all want to know, I have a thread going on Twitter. So week one, when I figure out where I'm going in Lexington, Kentucky, because we've got Kentucky week one, I will add to the hashtag college football donut tour thread. If you are making a trek around the SEC and you need a donut fix, I got you covered.
I'll tell you what, Lexington.
But Harold's Donuts in Como.
That's awesome. Lexington is a heck of a college town.
I haven't been there.
Really?
I'm excited. I'm
so
very
excited.
Who
do they have week one?
Toledo.
Okay, so I can't say anything about the football scene, but I was there for a basketball game, and we know basketball in Kentucky. It felt like a football game day when I was there for a basketball game. They were playing Virginia Tech a few years ago, and my dad and I went to Lexington, and I was like, holy hell. It was 4 hours before tip-off, and everywhere you turn is blue. Like, all the bars, the restaurants are packed. And, I mean, you know, like, Virginia Tech basketball – I mean, I won't even use Virginia Tech because Virginia Tech's, you know, nowhere close to Kentucky. I've been to North Carolina basketball games.
Insane.
And but North Carolina compared to Kentucky, night and day.
It's a blip.
Kentucky, they tailgate for basketball games.
Yes.
Like North Carolina, they're there. There might be some people out on Franklin Street. But like Kentucky, it is wall to wall, a sea of blue everywhere you turn for those games. So
even in Kentucky, too. I mean, I got to cover the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament this year in Jacksonville, where Kentucky and LSU were.
Yeah.
And I remember Antoine Walker telling me, oh, the whole arena is going to be blue. And I was like, it's Jacksonville. They're not going to travel down here in the first round of the tournament. Oh, my gosh,
they
the amount
out.
Of Kentucky fans that were there. I was like, okay, SEC fam is in the house. It was great.
It's wild. All right, so Harold's in Missouri,
yes.
Forever in Columbia.
Yes.
You got to stop by. You'll check back on us for Lexington. We'll follow you on Twitter. Where can they follow you?
I'm on Twitter at Alyssa Lang, and then my Instagram is linked on there, too, if you're into that.
Into the gram. All right, good deal. Well, Alyssa, this was fun. We'll have to do it again. I know you're about to get – so busy, me too. You know, it's that time of year.
Best
I say it with a sigh. I say it with a sigh, but I love it. I'm excited.
And you know, it's
going to
be gone in
excited.
A heartbeat.
It really will be.
Like that.
It really it won't be long before. Did you know, by the way, there's like a 2 week gap between the semis and the championship this year?
Yeah, it's even later
crazy.
This year. Someone at work the other day was like, "Oh yeah, this is our last weekend off until January 15th, is it or something?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Wow, that sounds kind of depressing."
Well, but at the same time, that's more football.
Oh my gosh! I mean, the fact that for us. the next 7 months are booked with football on the weekends, that's a dream come true. I'm never going to complain about that. It just, when you put it that way, no more Saturdays until the end of January. It's like, oh, man.
It beats working for a living,
that's
though.
That's absolutely correct.
All right, Alyssa, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for this College Football Country podcast. Thanks again so much for listening. Make sure you guys rate and review the show on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever you guys are checking out the pod. And be sure to tune in later this week. I will have the gambling extravaganza. We'll have picks, over-unders, futures, playoff predictions, Heisman Trophy, all that good stuff. If you remember last year, we nailed the Kyler Murray pick. We're going to try to get make it 2 for 2. We're going to try to make it 2 for 2 this year. I've got a sneaky suspicion who I think is going to take home the Heisman Trophy. So I'll hand out that pick and much more coming up later this week with a guest to be named. There may be a Rossi Three Stacks appearance. We'll see. And hope you guys check that one out as well. So make sure you guys continue to subscribe. Tell your friends about the podcast. That's the best way to share the word. If you guys are out there listening, you got a buddy who loves college football, they say, hey, I'm trying to find a podcast, you know, 30, 40 minutes a week. I just want something to get my college football fix. This is the show for you. All right. So make sure you guys are spreading the word. And I'll see you guys later this week. We're going to talk a little bit of gambling. I can't wait.